Welcome to the Kids with Big Emotions podcast. I am your host, Andy Clark, and today we have with us a guest that is well-versed in big emotions. She works with kids that have some of the most heightened emotions that are out there. So I am so excited for us to be chatting today with Megan Hamm and learn all of her experience and everything about what she does and the kids that she works with. So Megan, tell us about these amazing kids that you work with and what it is that you do.
Thank you so much, Andy, for having me on the podcast today. I'm excited to be here. As she said, I am Megan Hamm. I am a licensed professional counselor, racial play therapist. And I actually have been in the field for, this is my 17th year. And when I say that, it's kind of like, what, 17 years? But it has been 17 years. And as I look back on the work that I've done, I've worked with really throughout the whole 17 years, I've always worked with families and children who are in crisis, kids who have had behavior problems, reuniting families with those kids. And now I'm in private practice. My practice is in Brookhaven, Mississippi, and I'm still doing the same work. I'm working with children who have been impacted by trauma, children who have, I work with families who are in the foster care system, adoption. And that is what I do on a day-to-day basis.
At the same time, so rewarding, yet so tough.
Yes, 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 it is.
Yeah, amazing. So in diving into that, the one word that spoke up to me that sometimes just gets me at times is when we say a behavior problem, when a kid has a behavior problem, when they're a bad mm-hmm. behavior. And I don't like that. I mean, we need to say it. Completely. Mm-hmm. I understand that. I think it's just more in the schooling system when they're like, your child has a behavior problem. I'm thinking, no. There's way more under this hood. Mm-hmm. There's way more going on. That behavior is a sign. I think it's more, you know what, as I'm saying this, it's more because when I hear behavior, they're thinking that this is bad. We need to fix the behavior instead mm-hmm. of diving under the root of why is that behavior happening and thinking this is a sign that this child needs help.
Yeah, and so in the years that I've been doing this, I actually started, when I started working in the field, I worked for an agency, we did in-home care, and we worked with families. And so in orientation, they told us, you know, everybody should go get a deck of Uno cards. And we're like, why? They were like, because when you get with these families, you know, you play Uno with them. And so I bought the deck of Uno cards, and, you know, I went into the work feeling like my job was to change the behavior, you know. So if a child, you know, came in and they had anger issues, then our goal was to decrease the anger. If they were dealing with self-esteem issues, our goal was to increase the self-esteem. And for a long time, I did that work. And I tell people all the time, I got good at it. You know, I became a trainer, I became a supervisor in these different agencies because I was good at going in, looking at the problem, and identifying we need to change it. And then throughout the journey, something happened. And I realized that it was not about me trying to change the behavior, but more so us trying to figure out what was the reason that the behavior was there to start with. And so my work now is really anchored in, I say it's anchored in three ideals. And the first one is that behavior is communication. The second ideal is that we have to have a connection and a relationship before we can correct any behavior with any child. And the third one is that as adults, we are only responsible for how we respond, and we can't change a child's behavior. We can just influence it. And so I live by that when I hear behavior, when I hear things like that. And so I really dig deep with the adults and the parents of, you know, what is the behavior trying to communicate? How are you responding to that behavior, and what are you doing that is connecting you to the child during that moment?
Yeah. And it's so fascinating you're saying this, because before we hopped on, I was actually working on this framework as well for myself. Mm-hmm. And it was exactly as you're saying, I have five steps in it, but the first one is understanding that these behaviors aren't bad behaviors, there's signs that the child needs mm-hmm. something. And also it's making sure like how to be connected with them, how to mm-hmm. really make sure that we're connecting. So let's dive into this first. So we see these kids And we're going to talk about big situations because behaviors aren't so the little situations are them getting angry for playing, for making a mistake in Uno or losing Uno. That's, I'm going to say, a small behavior in a sense, right? We can go to the big ones of them actually like throwing things at people, breaking things, like all of these big behaviors. Why is that not? I don't know how to word this. You can maybe help me word this because I want to say, why is that not bad? Or what is that telling us? What do we do? Like, how do we change our mind frame from what we've grown up with of that's a really bad behavior to be, wow, what are they teaching us? How do we switch that in how do we help a parent to switch that mind frame?
So what I help parents do is first identifying that the behavior is communication, all the way down to what is the biggest, baddest behavior that we can think about, and then say, what are they trying to communicate in that? Because no matter how big or small the behavior is, they're still trying to communicate something. And the communication could be, and when I say behavior is communication, it's usually a communication of a need that's not being met. So what are they needing in that moment that we're not, that is not being able to be provided? And so the other thing I talk to parents about, so we talk about that behavior is that unmet need. The second part of it, when I'm talking to parents, is that the behavior is not in the moment when the child is in a, I call it meltdowns, right? When the child is in a meltdown cycle, they're in crisis. Right. So if we look at that as a crisis situation, then we will respond differently. Because if somebody's in a crisis, if our child walks in and they, their arm has been broken or they're on fire, we don't definitely go into stop the fire, stop doing that and stop doing that. We go into solution focus. We go into how to help the crisis. We go into, and so if we look at the behavior as a crisis, then we will want to go into de-escalation mode, because we recognize that there's an unmet need first. Second, we recognize that we need to de-escalate because they're in crisis. And then the third most important part is that you have to be able to control your responses, and that's the only thing that you're in control of. Because if somebody's in crisis, if you call the ambulance or you call the police and they showed up and they're as frazzled as you are, you're not going to think that they can help you, right? So it's like when our kids are having these big moments and they're having these meltdowns, and we show up to support them, not to stop it. We're showing up to support them, then we have to be able to be calm, recognize it, and help them recognize what is this need that's not being met so that we can help them in that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So the helping to switch that lens on this behavior is them asking for help is one thing, but it's another thing for us to how do we stay calm when we are in that moment? Because the parents, so parenting as hard as it is,
It
it's
is.
hard when you have kids that are behaving. But when you have kids that are having these meltdowns, having these outbursts, your life, you get into this mode as a parent too, where you're like, oh, if I go into this room where I hear them up, what mood are they going to be in? Can I do this? Am I going to be safe sometimes going into this room? Or am I going to be yelled at? Or do I have to deal with a panic attack? And you start getting into this heightened stress state yourself as a parent. So, how do you help the parents in this situation?
So one of the things that I guess that's two parts of that, because the work I do with the parents before the crisis, like before the meltdown, is about understanding their buttons, why something pushes their buttons, and why they see this behavior as bad. So we do a lot of perspective and work on that for them in the mindset realm. Also, we talk about like, okay, what this has happened before. So what has worked, what hasn't worked, and how they can create and set the environment at home to where it's a safer environment, especially if they're big meltdowns where they are throwing things and might hurt themselves. And I would encourage parents to, in that, if we know that they are easily triggered and they'll go to start throwing stuff, what type of environment can we have at home so they don't have access to it or it's not as easily accessible? Right. So that's the first part, like the pre-planning for and kind of how are you already before we go into the crisis. And then the second part is the crisis. Once you get into that with them, if you are in the situation and you know that my job is not to stop the behavior and teach them a lesson, then you go into it with a different expectation, right? And so if I'm going into this high emotional state, they're in meltdown, they're throwing things, they're doing all the things. If I go into the situation knowing, okay, Megan, when I walk in this room, my goal is to de-escalate. My goal is not to give a consequence. My goal is not to threaten a consequence. My goal is not to get them to see what they're doing is wrong. My goal is to de-escalate and make sure that everybody is safe. And so when I talk to parents and I walk them through that, they deal with the meltdowns differently. They feel different after, the kids feel different after. And then we work on the how do we help decrease these in the future? My work is not about stopping anything. And that's what I tell parents. If you think that you're going to come to me or your child's going to come to me and I can guarantee you won't have a meltdown in Walmart, I can go in it. I don't even have to send you an invoice because I know that's not what I do, right? So it's more so about in the moments when it happens. How can I prepare you for when it happens so that when it happens, you feel prepared and you can do the thing that you need to do to make sure that you and your child are safe?
Yeah, absolutely. So to recap on some things that you said that are like so important for the parents listening to understand is that there are things that we do in the moment of the meltdown, and the way that we react in the moment of the meltdown is so very different than what we do when the child is calmer, connected, they're in a different part. I call it their dolphin brain, where they're actually able to like be friendly and communicate and talk. That what you do in those moments is very different than what you do in the moment when they're in their shark, their clownfish, or their turtle brain. Like, so different. And it's in the thing that, and I think this goes back to in the start where I was saying about when you're told your child has like a behavior issue, quite often. Like, I know the one reason I pulled my son out of school was because they only wanted to help him when he was in the red, only when he was in the meltdown. That's when they wanted to teach him. That's when they wanted to talk to him. That's when they wanted to, like, do all the things that you just said you should not be doing. Is that? And I'm like, but you're not even dealing with why these meltdowns are happening. And so that's the thing that is so important for parents to understand is that what happens in the moment and how you react in the moment is so different than outside of the moment. So yeah, what you just said is so key in helping.
And I think a lot of times we don't, and not because we don't want to, but when we're stuck in a meltdown cycle, like we're so exhausted after that we don't think about what am I going to do to stop this before? What am I going to do to decrease it and all those things? I'm tired. Parenting itself is a difficult thing on top of being an adult, right? On top of now I'm having these meltdowns. And so when that's over and I go to bed at night, like I just want it to be over. Like I don't want to keep talking about it. I'm just glad we survived it. And so a lot of times it could be difficult for me to get a parent back into that. Let's go back into that space so I can coach you and teach you through where we were in that space, how to get out of it next time.
Yeah, especially when the tools that you might be suggesting, they may have already tried, but they tried them in the moment.
In the moment,
Right? A child is not going to stop and breathe in the moment. A child is not going to stop and have a conversation. A child is not going to stop and sometimes even like eat. Like, there's so many things they're not going to do in the moment that people are like, oh, this is what you need to do. Sometimes it's the time that you're doing it, or it's also the time and you're introducing it too fast, too soon, too quick, too many steps at once. You're not breaking it down small enough in order for that child with wherever the abilities in their stress system are to be able to learn and adapt that new tool. as well. It needs to be done like out of that moment. Definitely, it can't be in. So they're like, well, I've tried that and it didn't work. It's like, but when did you try it and
Yeah.
how did you introduce it?
And then the thing about it too is practicing, like practicing it even when you're not in a high stress moment. And one example that I give when I'm talking to parents is, when did we learn how to use a fire extinguisher? When did we learn stop, drop, and roll? Because we didn't learn stop, drop, and roll when we were on fire. As a kid, they taught us the intervention early. I've never had to use stop, drop, and roll. But I practiced it. I can remember practicing from pre-K all the way up to first and second grade. I've never had to use it. I've never had to personally use a fire extinguisher, but it's part of the training that I do on any job that I've ever had. We've always had to go through the fire extinguisher because you never know who may have to use it in the moment of a fire. And so being able to practice that with the kids before, in spite of, even when it's a good day, like, hey, let's practice some deep breathing. Making it fun because when I need you to recall that information, it needs to be from a place of mastery, like when you tie your shoe. Like I need you to be able to recall it without having to think about it. Because in the moment of a crisis, when they're melting down, they're the part of their brain that is logical and we know the part of their brain that's logical, that's decision making, is not on. It's not working. And so they have to be able to recall it in those moments of crisis. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's so true. And what you said about tying our shoes, if we think about it, when we're rushing our kid, when we're telling them, hurry up, and they're learning to first tie their shoes, they can't do it because they're switching into that part of the brain that's stressing and can't even focus on the steps. And that's tying their shoe. That if they're in like the heated moment, and really struggling, like they can't bring out any of those tools. They have to practice them so much out of that situation before they can, as well as the adults.
As well as the adults. And I think for us as adults, what having parents who are willing to learn and do something different and not have it be child focused. And I tell parents when I'm working with them, it's hard for me to work on something with you when I'm telling you how to stop somebody else from doing something. Like that, like what is that? And so when I'm working with parents, a lot of the work that I do is parent focused and it's personal focus. What are you doing in the moment and what can you do in the moment? Because that's the thing that we can control. We cannot control somebody else's behavior, even if it's our own child, no matter how much we want to, but we can influence their behavior and we can definitely impact their behavior by how they see us show up and respond and deal with the things that we're dealing with while they're dealing with the meltdown.
Yeah. And it's, you can't teach somebody else something if you don't know it yourself.
True.
So it's really important. And that's the same thing. Like when I'm working in my group, in my sports circle with my clients as well, it's for the parents to help the kids, but it's the parents that are going through the steps and learning the information themselves so that they can then internalize it. And then bring it to the kids. And it's fascinating too when as a parent we're trying something and we start really like let's just say breathing, right? And they're like, oh, okay, this is hard to remember to do every day. Or how do I fit this in here? Or like all of the questions that they start having. And when like we can point that out to the parents and help them see how it wasn't just a simple, now you need to do breathing and they know how to do it, that they had to learn to adapt, bring it into their schedule, learn how to do those things to get those tools in for them in order to then now teach it to their child. Their pro child is probably going to need more steps, more broken down, spread out even more for them to learn it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think making it fun. I think the especially with deep breathing, the most impactful way I've taught adults is how to do it with bubbles. Because we move so fast to just but that doesn't work with bubbles. Like if you've ever tried to blow bubbles, you have to be slow and intentional to get the bubble to actually come out of the wand. And so being able to help parents connect that, we're asking them to do, deep in, go out, and all those things. But if we're not being intentional, Or even not teaching them what to focus on. Like, if I'm talking to you, where is your brain going? Because if it's not going on your breathing, it might not be as effective. And so that's one of the things of working with the parents that I absolutely love is not only are we teaching them about first about how you are doing and how you are responding and working on yourself, your responses and your reactions, but there is still the opportunity to teach your child. And a lot of times when I'm first working with parents, and I'm not gonna honestly, I have parents who will get upset with me because when we first start working together, they're like, you're talking all about me and what I need to do, but he just needs to stop, right? He just needs to learn how to do this. They just need to learn how to do that. And all of that is part of the plan, but it's hard to get them to stop or get them to change how they're responding in a high stress situation when they're in crisis, when they're in meltdown, if you're in crisis and meltdown too. And so if we can first get you to see that part and help you to de-escalate them, then know that we'll work on the skill building as well. And so sometimes that's hard for parents to connect because they're used to, I bring my kid, I drop them off, let me know when to pay the invoice. And when I come home, when they come home, they should be fine because they've been in therapy today. And it's just not that effective. That's not how it works.
I love that. And that's the one thing is the one, which is so fascinating because you do this. And this is the one reason why I did create what I did as well, is the same thing is when I'm working the one-on-one with the kids, I'm like, we need to help these parents to understand it and to be able to work with it as well, which is why I created my group. And it's so, you're like one of the first ones I've heard that does this, where the parents are there. So are the parents there on their own, or is the, and then are they learning how to implement it with their kids at home, or are the kids and parents there together?
It depends on the age, but mostly what I do is I work with the parents individually, I work with the kids individually, and then I work with them together. And so that's the way that we do it here. And mostly my work with the kid individually is just to, I'm a play therapist. And so I'm really just looking for themes that may show up at home, that may show up in the family play therapy sessions. And so my work with the kid is I don't do as much skill building with kids as I used to. It's really skill building with the parents and then teaching the parents how to track and see the themes and do the skill building for themselves. And one of the reasons I do that is because I work with a lot of foster and adoptive kids. And it wasn't on purpose. Like I didn't just put an ad out and say, hey, bring me your traumatized kids. But what I saw was in becoming a play therapist, there were a lot of children in my area. There were a lot of families who were a foster and adopted. And so it was building that connection. We needed the connection, we needed the attachment, but they had had so many relationships with other people and, social services, the judges, the court system, that I realized they didn't need to build a connection with only me. Because I wasn't the stability for them. I wasn't the everyday stability, I'm gonna say that. I wasn't the everyday stability. And so I was like, that's when I stopped doing as much individual work with children because they didn't need to be attached to only Miss Megan or attached to, the social work or attached to the judge. They need to attach with the people they live with. And that's when I started doing parent training, well, parent therapy, family therapy, and family therapy with family play therapy with the children because I wanted the parents, whomever they're living with at the time, to be a part of that attaching to a strong, supportive person. And so that's when I stopped doing a lot of just working specifically with the kids, because that's what I was doing. I was behavior management through and through. If you bring them in with some anger issues, I'll help them with the anger issues. And we'll talk to the parents about it, but I did a lot of skill building with children. And the parents weren't able to walk them through those skills when it was time to use them. Like I had parents who are willing to say, okay, when you get upset, then I know what, Miss Megan said to remind you to do this. But mom didn't know how to do it. And so if he was doing it right, wrong, or indifferent, mom couldn't support him in that. Because all she knew was, Miss Megan said you should be breathing. Miss Megan said you should be doing this. And they weren't, there was that disconnect. And so I do a lot of work with parents.
Yeah, that's so important. So I wrote down some notes so I don't forget all of the things to say.
Okay. But
the first thing that's just a side on my notes is you also working with that parent is giving them the skills, especially a foster parent, for all of the other kids that come in their door.
Yes.
And for all of, like, I mean, I know with me too, I just, for me, it's not the foster kids. For me, it's neurodivergent kids usually.
Mm-hmm.
And my kids' friends are all neurodivergent. And I love when they come to our house and I get to see all their different neurodiversities. And
mm-hmm.
because I'm trained in it, I love to, you know, you get to see all the different ways that you can be helping these kids with my toolbox. And so the mm-hmm. same thing, when I'm helping parents with the neurodiversities, you're helping them with the adoptions and the foster, all of those things. And we're able to then expand that. Like, we're only one person and that mm-hmm. person can, it's just amazing. Like, you're just helping more than just that one child when you help the parent.
It's the ripple effect. You know, we're just dropping one thing in the pond, but the ripple gets to go and goes farther. And by you saying that, it makes me think about a lot of times for us, because we're trained in it, we minimize how, well, I know for me, I do a lot, but we do. We minimize, like, with you having children who are neurodivergent and their friends are, and you work with that population, I can only imagine that your home is set up in a way that is very intentional with certain things for people who are neurodivergent. So is my home as a play therapist, as a former foster parent. My home is set up in a totally different way, and it becomes who we are. And so that's part of what I give to parents as well, because you can set this up at home. And I tell people, yeah, I had a lot of training. I've done a lot of things. I had a lot of schooling, as people say, but ultimately the thing that I believe about kids has become part of who I am. And so it's hard for me to see it anything but that, to the point where sometimes people are like, but Megan, you just have to see the other side. I can hear the other side. I can understand the other side. But if you send me a child in crisis, it's going to be hard for me to see anything but what is the need that they're needing to be met that's not being met. It's hard for me to see anything but that. It's hard for me to see manipulation. It's hard for me to see all of these things that they throw out, and, oh, he just wants to have his way, and, oh, he just doesn't like to hear the word no, and he just wants to manipulate me. And it's really difficult for me to see that. And so it, because me seeing children, the behavior as a way to say, there's something going on, or I'm in crisis, or I don't have the words for it, so I'm using my action, I'm using my behavior. And so I lead with that. And that's one of the things that I try to impart on parents, is that if we just don't look at the behavior, but we look at this as the child that I birthed, or the child that I invited into my home, who just needs a little extra love and tender care right now. Right. Not saying that what they're doing is right. And that's another conversation I have with parents all the time. Supporting a child through crisis is not saying that it was okay for them to throw the spaghetti. It's not saying that it was okay for them to break the toy. That is absolutely not what we're saying. What I'm saying is, if I walk into a burning building, I want the firefighter to help me get out the building before they start asking me how the fire started. That's all I'm saying. If you see me in a crisis in a burning building, don't stand there with me in this burning building asking me how it got started. Get me out the building. So that's what I do with parents, just trying to help them to reignite that just relationship of, I like my kid and my kid likes me. And if we start with that, the rest of it is gonna fall in place at a higher speed. If you like the person.
No, it's so true. And I love that. And I love having a house full of kids. Mm-hmm. It excites me so much, and seeing the differences in them and the social awkwardness in some of them, mm-hmm. and the, you know, the struggles to follow steps, or like the mess that they make sometimes, when it's just hilarious. I find it hilarious. I love it. Doing their best.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just... and just watching them work together with the skills, I don't know, it just opens my heart so much. Like, so for example, too, the kids all decided one day to one kid was teaching them how to make fried rice. And so that my one son just takes out a dozen eggs and the other kid just starts cracking eggs and putting them into the frying pan. And my son looks at him and goes, what's your plan with those eggs? He goes, I don't know. And it's just so funny because that's what me, I'm always like, what's your plan with that? What are the steps we're going to do? But this kid didn't, his neurodiverse part of him was he didn't think plan steps. And so he's just shoving all these eggs in this. He goes, well, how many eggs do we need? And he starts using the reflexive questioning with him of how many eggs do you need in this? And is the eggs the first thing we should put in? And so the boy actually stopped and paused and they stopped putting more eggs in and they started putting the other ingredients that should have been first. And it was just, I love watching them all work together too. Once you get those kids where they're feeling connected, where they're not in that crisis mode, where they're not stressing, and they can actually start learning more of the tools that they need as well from these other kids as the kids are also learning. So it's not even the parents. It's not just the parents. Mm-hmm. Once the parents learn these skills and these kids learn these skills, then they start helping other kids learn these skills as well. And it's just.
Yeah. And I, in that story, the thing that I love that you did not mention is the environment to be able to take 12 eggs with the attempt of cracking them all. Because how many times are our kids trying to do something and then it's automatic consequences, it's automatic redirection, it's automatic this. And so then it makes them feel like, okay, I can't even try. Because when I try to do something and I make a mistake, these are the things that happen and I get in trouble and all of the things. And so I think for parents, that's a conversation that I have with them. I feel like I'm always talking to parents, but that's what I do. So that's a conversation about what environment are we setting up? Are we setting up the environment where, and there's this example that comes to mind of a kid who pulls out the pots and pans and they start beating on the pots and pans. And you have the one parent who will go buy them a drum set and you have the other parent who will be like, no, put that up, stop making a noise, right? And so it's the same behavior, but what environment are we creating, you know, at home? We can control that part. We can't control the kid pulling the pot and pans out, but we can control the environment that they are in and where their level of comfort is. Because if a child is connected to you and y'all just really like each other, and I mean, not I love my kid because that's my responsibility. I love my mom because she gave birth and be like, I really like you as a person. You know, I really like to go and enjoy doing things with you. Then when the connection is there, 9 times out of 10, and I have this conversation with parents that I work with. Once we talk about connection and we start doing connection activities, when we do that next parent consultation, I have not had a parent yet who will tell me that the meltdowns have not decreased in terms of the number they're having or the time span that they're having them. Every single parent, once we start building that connection and that trust in that relationship. And so for you, having that environment where the kid can go in the refrigerator and get the 12 eggs and start cracking them without automatically being reprimanded or redirected or consequenced for that.
Yeah, it was so cool. And I just stood back. It was actually my one son that was like, hey, what's your plan? He didn't yell at him. He didn't say stop. He didn't say, what are you doing? And it wasn't even me. I just walked by and we were picking up rice for days. It was in crannies that we thought we'd vacuumed and swept up, but they had so much fun and they've gotten better. This was like last year. Yeah, it's just amazing. And in what you said as well, it was fascinating because I was writing this all down before I was going through this whole sequence before we got onto this podcast episode, and the connection piece was where I was talking to. And one of my questions for a parent is, notice when your child's having a meltdown, are they beside, first off, an adult that they trust and an adult that's connected? Because if they're melting down around you too, the odds are you're not connected. You're not in the dolphin brain at that moment. You're in like your shark, your clownfish, or your turtle. And they're struggling as well. And it's just fascinating when you start observing, because I was speaking with another parent recently as well, who was talking about their son and their meltdowns, and they're melting down with this one teacher, and the teacher's a newer teacher who is more of the thing of the kids should just do what we tell them to do, when they do it, how they do it. not thinking about perfectionism, fear of making mistakes, all of these things. And when you're doing an art project with geometric shapes, and there's a child that needs those geometric shapes to be exactly the perfect angle and all of these things, there's meltdowns. And it's fascinating because they said that then the principal will get called and come, and that principal just calms him, just takes him, and he's calm. And I was like, so the difference there in noticing is the one is an adult that is very connected with them, and the other one isn't. And you can see that even in that moment, that child can change from outburst, meltdown, struggling, to connected, calm, and able to do what's being asked of them. And so parents start noticing as well, when their child are having meltdowns, look around. Are they around peers that they're feeling really dysregulated around? Are they around adults that they're feeling dysregulated around? Like, what is the, it's not just necessarily them and what's going on with them in that moment. It's also the individual that is around them and their energy and what they're bringing to the table as far as connection goes.
And I think it's hard because honestly, in the moment, adults just want the kids to do better. And like at school, at church, at, you know, and the grocery store, at home, it's like, And one of the things that, especially working with foster and adoptive kids and parents, is me helping them try to connect where trauma shows up, right? So in that moment, the thing that you're seeing is not about what's going on in the moment, but it might be going on about what it reminds them of or what has happened before. And sometimes for foster and adoptive parents, it's like, but that's not what's going on now. And Miss Megan, I can't do anything about what happened, right? And so for them, it's, but how do we stay with somebody in a journey that they're on when we can't control the destination, where they've been or where they're going, but we can just be right here in the moment. And I think that's a big thing that people sometimes will minimize, is just our impact on somebody in the moment. And we don't think about it until we have a Super Bowl champion or Olympian get on stage and say, hey, I had a fifth grade janitor who told me I would be a great person. And that was the first person in my life who ever told me that. And it changed my life, right? Just that one person, that one interaction, or those consistent interactions. And so that's what I'm talking to the parents about. Like, you know, sometimes being able to be that connector for them, but also they're having a hard time when it's something that they didn't make it. They didn't make the trauma. And they're just trying to help them on this journey, but this part of the journey gets tough. And so I think that that's a great point too about the connection, like who are they connected to and how can we learn to be that connection?
Yeah, and that's the thing, like we think of kids in sports and activities that they're doing and you're like, well, they did so well on this one team and then they can't do well on this other team. It's like, well, who's the coach? What are the players like? What's the whole connection feeling like there?
Yeah.
And then also something you said, like this brought back to one of the points that I wrote down, is we have these, I guess, parenting's evolved in how, and we're in this transition right now of going from where do as you're told, what anybody tells you, you just, if whatever you're told, to do it. And we're changing that to now being like, oh, if they're not able to do what they know they're supposed to do, because the kids know what they're supposed to do. If they're not doing what they know they're supposed to do in that moment, then that's where we need to look under the hood of the behavior. So that's where this transition is happening. But many people have not even heard of this transition, have not even heard of this way of parenting, this different style, or they're looking at it and they're thinking, but if I let these kids away with this, if I don't punish them, then how are they going to know that what they've done is wrong and bad? And how do you answer that?
I think for me, it's about I focus on in the moment. In the moment, what are we trying to do? Then once we go back to it, like in the moment, the goal is crisis management. The goal is de-escalation when you're having a meltdown. And when you go back to it, a lot of times talking to parents about, you know, society makes us feel like the conversations in society is that we are responsible for our kids. And so we take on a lot of that stuff, right? Anytime a kid does something in the news, the first question they ask is, who are the parents? Where are they? And how do they raise them, right? Those are the questions they ask. And so we take that on. And we also, we do a lot of projection. we feel like if a child, they'll say if you let them get away with it at 5, they're going to be doing the same thing at 15. Or if you let your child say a curse word when they're 3, they're going to go to jail, because they're going to think that there's no authority. And I think a lot of times we put all of those things on ourselves, and we are trying to stop it now. You're trying to stop your 3-year-old who's having a meltdown from going to jail at age 45. Like, that's what we're doing. That's a lot. That is absolutely a lot. And so one of the things that I work through parents with is, in this moment, what are they doing? What is it? What is the skill that you feel like needs to be built? What is it that you want them to know more of? I'm always going to ask the parent, how are you modeling that? How are you teaching that? And how are you reinforcing it? That's all we can do. We can model it, we can teach it, we can reinforce it. So if it's, a child hitting their siblings, that's a big one. They're hitting their sibling, they're hitting their sibling. Figuring out what is it beyond that behavior? How are we modeling hitting at home? Right? We for toddlers, we do a lot of popping. So if we're popping and they're popping, everybody gotta stop popping. If that's a behavior that we want to stop, So then how are we teaching it, helping them understand why it may not be when you feel this kind of way? Because once we've investigated that behavior and we know what it is, when you are mad at your sister, hitting her is may not be the best response, right? And then how are you reinforcing it? When they're hitting, what are you doing? Are you giving them a console? Is it consistent? Like, every time they hit their sister, what is the consequence? And are you being consistent in that? But then when we go into consequences, I talk to parents too about making sure that I believe in natural consequences. So I believe in consequences that would have been the natural progression anyway of whatever that behavior is. Like, if the kids don't want to brush their teeth, and I tell my kids, kids, hey, you're having a hard time brushing your teeth. You chose not to brush your teeth this morning, so we won't eat any candy today because I don't want you to get any cavities, right? We won't eat any chips today. And I have those conversations with my kids. They understand that, and they feel like they're on punishment from snacks. And I'm like, no, you're not on punishment, but you just chose not to brush your teeth today. And so children are going to naturally want to do the thing that they want to do. And so our goal as parents is to be able to, how are we modeling it? How are we teaching it? And then how are we reinforcing those behaviors? And those, it could be the small things that are happening that we don't necessarily recognize. But once you identify that, okay, this is a problem in my house. With maybe it's the yelling, maybe it's the cursing, maybe it's the hitting, then what am I going to do as a parent? Parenting is very active. That's the thing. It's as we are parents, and we have to actively be doing something. It's not about just sitting back and letting it happen. Because that's not, especially if you want, like you say, we want to have productive citizens. And so we want them to learn these skills and these life skills. And it's about just all around being that person that you want to be around you versus, I need to stop this before, they get locked up when they're 16.
So it's one thing for the parent to understand this and the parent to be doing it. It's another thing for extended family members and people out in public and that to know what you're doing without judgment. So how do you help a parent when even their spouse is not on board with this, or when maybe they even have other family members living, like parents living with them, or somebody that's living in their house with them? Or somebody that is even not living in the house with them, but keeps inserting in them that, like, you need to be telling this kid what to do. You need to go back to that older style of parenting, that punishment style. How do you help a parent manage that?
Yeah. So one of the things is, I think part of it is conversation, like being able to have conversations with those extended families about, not necessarily these are the techniques that I'm doing, this is what I'm doing, but this is what my goal is for my kids. I want my kids to be able to make a mistake and understand that them making a mistake or them spilling the milk does not mean that they're a bad person, they're a horrible person, that they're going to be ungrateful for the rest of their life. Like, that's not what that means. That means I spilled the milk, right? And so being able to, and one of the conversations I had with my family, because I am raising my children differently than one I was raised, which I wasn't raised in a bad way, but it's different. I'm raising my children differently. And then my family around me, you know, people have conversations of, well, you just need to, and you need to stop. Well, if you just, then you wouldn't be having those problems. And so having those conversations with them are, these are the things that I am, these are the goals that I want for my kids. And so when these things happen, this is what I would like to see. And we have a conversation about what I would like to see versus what they feel like needs to be done, and how can we come on the same page? Because if I'm not the parent who is going to be yelling and cursing and all of the things at my kid, you know, when they make a mistake, I definitely would not want you to be doing the same thing. You know, it's kind of like even at school where, you know, you can sign the paper for them to get paddled or get the, you know, paddling is what it is, get the corporal punishment. If that's not something I'm doing in my house, then why would I let a person who is not connected to them be able to do that? And so it's the same conversations that I have, you know, with people who are supporting me and keeping my girls of, these are the things that we're doing in my house. This is what works. Hey, this is sometimes it doesn't work. And a lot of times it's more like, when my girl does this, if you help her understand this, you'll see something different. And she'll accept a consequence, or she might, you know, she might struggle with accepting the consequence. But this is maybe where it's coming from. So I think for me, I do a lot of explaining, and I have parents that explain it as well. The things that you do that work, and some of the reason why. Because the people know, the people are more open to doing things when they know the why, right? And so a lot of times having those conversations with your support. And sometimes there's some people who are just old school traditional parenting. And as parents, sometimes we have to make the hard decision where, okay, if I need you to keep my kid for an hour, that'll be okay. But you may not be the person they can stay overnight with, because we just have a totally different parenting style. And sometimes you'll meet those family members who will, we have family members who will get your child to support you just so they can prove to you that you're doing it wrong. And we have to be aware of those adults too.
So many dynamics to that. Megan, we could go on forever like this. I know, I was just looking at the time and going, oh my goodness, we are like totally at time. So, for everybody that is out there, I know you have a book. So, I'd love
I
you to
do.
just tell us a little bit about your book. And then in the show notes as well, we're going to have your website and we have your LinkedIn and you have a Facebook community as well. So, all of those will be linked in the
Okay.
Show notes below for everybody, but can you give people a little bit about your book?
So my book is The Heart of the Matter. It's a compassionate approach to transforming behaviors and fostering adopted children. The book was written as that, you know, people always say, I wrote the book I needed. But in reality, you know, I've been a licensed professional counselor for 17 years. Well, I've been in the field for 17 years. But it wasn't until I became a foster parent where I realized that there was something more that was needed. And so even with all of the foster parenting training that I had, even all of the parenting skills training that I had, that was just something that was needed more to help me, that would help me connect differently, right? And so I've created that book. And so the book takes us on a journey of a foster parent meeting a foster child for the first time, and just some of the struggles that she has. The book is broken down into two different sections. I call it Parents and R&R. It's the relationship with self, which talks about the things that we talk about. Who am I? Why am I here? What does parenting mean to me? But also ways to connect with your child. And how do we have that relationship with them and just getting to know them? And I say liking them as a person. And so the book has some real tools that you can use, but it also helps you on that just journey of parenting and what parenting is and some of the things, the tools that you can have, understanding that behavior is a child's way of communicating an unmet need. And that is impacted even more by trauma.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay. So we will put the link for your book as well into the show notes. So everybody's got that. So we'll have your website where they can go. I'm going to assume that they can only work with you in your state because I don't know how it works. Like I know every state, every province is always different with therapy. So can you work with people anywhere or is it?
So in terms of therapy services, it's only in my state, but I also have a coaching program for parents who have children with meltdown behaviors, and that we can do across state lines. It's virtual, so they can definitely be a part of that.
Amazing. Okay, so you do have an opportunity for people to work outside as well. Okay, and
Yeah.
all those links are on your website then.
Yep, all the links will be are on the website.
Perfect. Okay, so we have, we've got your website, LinkedIn, and then are you on Facebook or Instagram?
I am. I'm on both. I'm on both of them, and I can send you links to those as well.
Yeah, shoot, I don't have those links. So definitely pass on those links
I
to me and
will.
we'll add them to the show notes for everybody. So go and check out Megan if you would like to support her and to learn more about her and possibly work with her, get her book. All those links are below. And if anybody would like to work with me, I have the link below as well to work on with me one-on-one or to as well. Well, the one-on-one is to book a call with me just to see if we are a really good fit to work together. And I also have the link below for my support circle, which is my group where we have other parents as well that are learning to support their kids with big emotions. All right, that is everything for today. Definitely go down to the show notes and find out more about Megan and myself, and I will see you in the next episode.